consider the budding legacy of Edward Snowden, changing the debate on national security with his leaks of classified documents, changing the U.S.-Russian relationship. President Obama yesterday answered the decision by Vladimir Putin to let Snowden have asylum in Russia by canceling a scheduled face-to-face summit meeting later this year. But what if you were told that domestic and foreign surveillance data, obtained often under questionable circumstances, has been helping to put people in prison on drug charges for the past two decades, way before Snowden? Then what if you were told that the evidence from that surveillance is actually kept out of court and away from lawyers and judges in a complicated and dubious-sounding process called parallel construction? Reuters reporter John Schiffman helped break this story of seemingly needless secrecy that appears to bypass our basic rules of evidence in a court of law. John Schiffman, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So let me just start by asking, what can the Special Operations Division of the DEA, which consists of a bunch of other organizations within the sort of law enforcement establishment in Washington, what can SOD do that maybe even the CIA can't accomplish with its use of evidence and ability to manipulate possibly even trials in the United States?
Well, what the Special Operations Division has been doing since the late 90s is it has been sending along tips that it gets from all over the country and all over the world from foreign governments, tips gleaned from NSA wiretaps, tips gleaned from informants, domestic wiretaps that are legally done in the United States, and they pass them on to agents all over the country. And what they're doing is they're investigating people for ordinary drug crimes inside the United States and money laundering crimes, not national security crimes. Under the law, the intelligence community shares with law enforcement information they get about crimes. The issue that comes up here is not so much the process by which they get the information and use it. It's what they do afterward, which is they conceal it from defendants at trial. And that's something that some critics say is unconstitutional.
Let's talk for a moment about this database, DICE, that actually is the name of these tips that are assembled and archived and passed along, and this has been going on for years.
Sure. The DICE database is a database of all legally acquired telephone numbers during drug investigations. So if they're investigating you, they send out a subpoena or a search warrant, they get all of the numbers of all the people you're dialing. And if they're investigating me in a totally separate investigation, they get all the numbers I'm dialing and all the numbers dialing me. They put both of those into a giant computer, the DICE database, which also includes license plate data and internet information, all collected legally. And they use that to connect the dots between different cases. And by using all that data to connect the dots, they alert other agents across the country or police departments about making these connections. The issue that critics see is that they're not disclosing this during trial, that this is how these cases are starting.
So an attorney representing someone in a drug crime case could be hearing from a client saying something like, there's no way they can know this. There's no way they can understand this. There's just no possible evidence that this occurs. And the attorney might be saying, well, they've got something or they're working a hunch or but it turns out that the evidence is, in fact, completely hidden from defendants?
Well, what the typical case here that the DEA, I met with them, and this is their typical scenario, is they'll get one of these tips from one of these four different ways, through the DICE database, through the NSA intercepts, through the informants, through the legally acquired domestic wiretaps. They'll pass it along, but they pass it along in a stage whisper, if you will, and they say, don't let anyone know. They use a concept they call parallel construction. So a police officer or a DEA agent will identify a suspect. They'll know that this person is going to be in a certain area. They'll pull them over for speeding or rolling through a stop sign or some pretextual traffic stop. And lo and behold, inside, they'll find a kilo of cocaine or they'll find some drugs or something. And the person who's arrested thinks that the cops just got lucky or the DEA just got lucky. And in the reports, the agents and officers are instructed to start the investigation by saying, I was driving down the street and I noticed that a car went through a stop sign or failed to signal when it turned. And the problem with this is that you get into pretrial discovery obligations of the prosecutors to turn over evidence that could be exculpatory, helpful to the defense in a variety of different ways. And usually the defense asks for all evidence and they have a laundry list of things that they would ask for, but they don't know to ask for this. And you can't ask for what you don't know exists.
Now, there are two ways of looking at this. There's the strictly sort of constitutional approach, but there's also the question of, you know, if they're right, if they're actually nabbing drug criminals, isn't this a bit of a technicality here? How do you answer that?
Well, you know, I talked with about a dozen current or former agents, and about half of them said, look, you know, we use this to catch some pretty bad guys. They've been doing it for 20 years. They do it almost every day. But, you know, I also talked to a prosecutor who said that a DEA agent once lied to him, told him that there was an informant was the original tip in the case when actually it came from an NSA wiretap, he later learned. And he was furious. He said, you know, this is not the way that we should be comporting ourselves if agents are misrepresenting their investigations when cases go to trial before a judge and before a jury. You know, I'm a lawyer. I was a little surprised that this kind of thing goes on, that agents are directed to start their investigation with step two instead of step one.
John Schiffman, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So what do prosecutors and judges think of this sort of thing? A systematic program to keep crucial evidence secret and a federal program that may be encouraging prosecutors and investigators to lie in open court. With me now, Nancy Gertner, Harvard professor of law and former federal judge. Professor, welcome.
Thank you.
So let's just go straight at it. Can you think of a case where something like this might have actually occurred in one of your courtrooms, and the notion of starting on step two rather than step one and suppressing evidence from open court? What do you think of that principle?
Well, the point is that I have never heard of it before. I was a criminal defense lawyer for 24 years and a judge for 17, and I had never heard of this before. And yes, there were cases that began with traffic stops. With the fact of the cop sort of happening on someone doing something they shouldn't. In most of those cases, at some point they had to disclose, or they did disclose, how they focused on the person. In other words, I never saw anything that smacked of parallel construction. The prosecutors would say, we had been investigating this person in New York. We thought he was a drug dealer. We then wired ahead the information to the cops on the Mass Pike, and they waited until this individual changed lanes the wrong way. But the defense in that situation got the earlier investigation. And the point is that you go through the earlier investigation and you say, was there any illegality in the earlier investigation? Were any rules violated? Were wiretaps legal? Was exculpatory evidence disclosed? You can track how this arrest that was on the Mass Pike, you know, traced to legal or illegal activities. If you begin the story with a stop on the Mass Pike, you lose the ability to enforce rights and due process all the way prior to that point.
So in your view, would a case that, where we discover what the original tip was and it begins before the stop on the street, is that challengeable all the way down? Is the entire sequence of evidence challengeable because we don't know step one?
If all across the country they're going to be just step two prosecutions, can people challenge them all across the country? There's going to have to be an investigation of what kind of misrepresentations were going on in court to prosecutors and defense lawyers, and more significantly to judges. We're going to have to go back and roll the dice back all the way to try to figure out how that's happened. I mean, consider it this way. Let's say I go into your room and I illegally search your room. I come up with all sorts of bad stuff. I put it in a report. The report makes it gets to a police officer. The police officer is told, just watch you until you jaywalk. You jaywalk, and then no one has to disclose that there had been a prior illegal search. I mean, that essentially undoes all the protections of criminal procedure that we've been working towards for 50 years.
All right. So hearing you describe it, there seems to be a real sense of outrage in your voice about this practice and our ability to even go back and try to correct cases that may have been, I hesitate to use the word, manipulated.
Right. No, I mean, it's, you know, when you step back 50,000 feet, the Bill of Rights really was intended to obviate the need to simply trust the executive branch. We don't say you know, as a society, trust the executive branch. We create checks and balances. Without information, there's no way that judges and defense lawyers and even prosecutors can check, can find out whether the course of the procedures comported with the Constitution. And we are a constitution about procedural protection. So this is really substantial. The other part of this is that this is really, you know, as some people would describe it, mission creep. It's one thing to talk about special rules for the NSA and the FISA court. It's quite another thing to talk about special rules for what is essentially ordinary crime. That's precisely what the Bill of Rights, you know, should be about. The courts have a way of dealing with confidential information. There are many times when I was a judge that there would be an informant that the prosecutor didn't want to disclose, or there may have been classified information. You get all of that. Everyone knows that it's going on. The judge looks at things in camera, which means behind closed doors. And at least a judicial officer makes a determination of whether the information was legally or illegally obtained. All of this is taking place behind closed doors, solely under the rubric of the executive. And that is completely inconsistent with what we do in criminal justice.
So is this another case where we have to rewrite the Bill of Rights, incorporating notions of digital databases that live essentially forever?
Well, that's a great point. We have to, I don't know about rewriting the Bill of Rights, but we certainly have to figure out how to ensure those protections in a digital world. That's for sure.
All right. Do you think this is more serious than Snowden?
You know, that's hard to say. It's more serious in the sense that it's ordinary crime. You know, there's ordinary crime like drug prosecutions, et cetera. And then we have national security crime, and we've come up with all sorts of exceptions to transparency and to rules for national security crime. Ordinary crime should not be subject to special rules.
Well, I hear you grappling with it. Thanks so much for allowing us into your mind there. Nancy Gertner is a Harvard professor of law and a former federal judge. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.